is this bill? Just because.
The Senate Transportation Committee will come to order. It's Tuesday, April 30th, and it's 1:37. So the bills that we do have up before Senate Transportation today is SB 218, the Marine Pilots Bill, and SJR 23, Transportation Fund. And we welcome the people on the teleconference. It's my understanding we have Anchorage, Ketchikan, Valdez on the teleconference. And is that listen only or we're okay. I think that's my okay. The order that I would like to do is I'd like to take up SJR 23 first, and then hopefully we can go ahead and move that resolution out, and then we will spend the rest of the time on SB 218, and we'll see where we're at with that, whether we're looking at moving that out or not today. So on SJR 23, we do have prime sponsor here, Senator Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've introduced this legislation. This is probably the second or third time, I guess, and it's an old friend of mine that I've always felt that transportation is probably one of the most important things that state government does and provides for the public, and that the fees and the taxes we pay concerning transportation, roads, aviation fuel, motor vehicle fuel, those types of things are directly connected to the usage of our transportation system. And I think that the public recognizes this. When they go to the gas pumps, they connect that tax they pay to the pothole and the maintenance of those potholes out on their roads in front of their houses. So I think it's an important step here that we're taking to help stabilize the cost of taking care of the maintenance problem we have out there. And in this bill, in this resolution, we specify construction also. And I believe there are times when construction of small bridges, those type of small facilities directly connected with transportation need to be financed through just state funds. And we can't access federal funds for those projects. And I think those small construction projects could come out of this fund. So I have included construction along with maintenance and operation of facilities connected with transportation. Mr. Chairman, I think, again, I'll just specify that when the Constitutional Convention took place and our Constitution went together, they decided that the dedication of funds was not the way to go. They did not like that. That's the way it had always been under the territorial clause. Everything was dedicated, and it caused a lot of problems, a lot of concerns. So they took that away from state government. They wanted an appropriation process, and everything should be considered under an appropriation process. And I agree with that, but those that were there at the time can tell you that there was a large debate on whether or not transportation should be taken out of the dedication question, and that it was the last one to go and at the last moment. So even they recognize that transportation is an important responsibility of government. And with that, I would urge your support.
Thank you very much, Senator Jones. And for the record, I don't think I mentioned it, Senator Pierce, Senator Jones and Senator Menard are here in attendance. Then, Commissioner, you'd like to make a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Frank Turpin, Commissioner of the Department of Transportation. And I would like to echo Senator Jones' remarks. The Department of Transportation very strongly supports this bill. We think it would give us an independent fund, independent of the oil industry, and it would ensure that our highways and transportation facilities can be maintained to the standards even in a declining oil revenue time. I also would like to add that most states have this type of a dedicated fund. Your gasoline taxes go to the highway program in the states. And this is a very significant factor in most states. States like California that has millions of dollars that go into the highway fund through gasoline taxes. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the amounts or anything.
Senator Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, in some of your materials that you received as to what fees and taxes it would apply, I noticed that the Marine Highway System receipts were not included in that. Do you see a problem with, is there some problem with including those receipts in the transportation fund, or so that, I know we have statutes that set up a separate fund within the general fund for that purpose, but I just wondering, when you consider the fact that, you know, that is a transportation system, that could be included as a dedicated fund.
Senator, I'd be happy to see that. We have no problem at all. We, of course, have a pseudo-arrangement today that dedicates the funds, but it's not binding, as you well know. I think that to include the Marine Highway into the dedicated funds would be very helpful.
So through statutes, we've done this. We couldn't go all the way with that, Mr. Chairman, because of the, of course, the conflict we get into with the Constitution. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner, do you know how many states have dedicated funds?
It would be in the mid-30s, I think 35 to 38. It's difficult to say because a lot of them have partially dedicated and partially they go for some other purpose. I can give you that information, sir.
I was just wondering about that. And, of course, the federal government has the dedicated on that side. The
federal government is dedicated except for 2.5 cents, I believe it is, on the gasoline tax. And that's just a recent change.
Mm-hmm. Which is due to... Wasn't there a time certain on that 2.5 cents? Or
yes, that's right. Yeah. And it, of course, is to reduce the deficit.
Yes. Yeah. Are there any other questions from committee members, from the commissioner? Thank you very much. Is there anyone here in Juneau that wants to testify on SJR 23? Then on the teleconference network, Mr. Dillon in Anchorage, are you there?
Hey, yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Yeah, you woke us up. We're hearing you loud and clear. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Dillon. I'm the executive director of Alaska Trucking Association, and I'm here today to voice the association's support for SJR 23. We think the idea of a dedicated fund for transportation's time has come. We would like to see this put before the Alaska populace for their decision on the matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Frank. Is there anyone else on the teleconference network that wants to testify on SJR 23?
Yes, this is David Waldron. I'm in Anchorage.
Go ahead, David, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm here to testify against the bill as written. The problem in Department of Transportation is not a lack of money. The problem is they have not bothered to determine the level of service, develop performance standards, and thereby determine equitable funding requirements. Commissioner Turpin mentioned what other states have done in the way of funding. Those other states, plus the Canadian provinces, have also established the standards I mentioned. DOT and PF in Alaska used to have standards in the standard operating procedure manuals in the 60s. They've elected to discard those because they do not want the accountability associated with any requirements of that nature. What will happen if you pass this and this money is the same thing that happened in the 85-86 time frame when the severe cuts came down? Other than M&O, especially in the design and construction area, everybody was moved, not everybody, but a large percent were moved out of the operating budget over into what they call the capital budget, and they saved all those warm bodies. Those warm bodies were paid for at the expense of maintenance and operation. I'll give you a brief example. As a director of maintenance and operation for Southeast Alaska at that time, I had a requirement to purchase a $30,000 lot on the Skagway Airport and had received the fund in appropriation. I asked design and construction, as I was required to do, to generate the lease purchase agreement. In any real estate office, this would have cost approximately $2,000. I got nervous, so I asked for an accounting of where we stood. At that point in time, I had been charged $8,087.24 for the generation of this lease purchase agreement, and was told that if I wanted them to continue, that it would take another $1,500 or $2,000. The legislature should maintain control. The response is going to be the legislature will have control. However, the legislature will not be able to use this funds for any other purpose. Therefore, it will be turned over to transportation. The other problem I have, the major problem, is including construction. If you include construction, that is where the money will go. Department of Transportation and Public Facility is a highway and airport construction-oriented organization. If you want to maintain the roads, you must first go back and establish a maintenance program, including some form of computerized maintenance management system, so the legislature can tell what the department did with the money the previous year. Again, I speak against the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Senator Jones.
I just like to comment that, you know, there's no way, shape, or form to tell the department how to handle their money. That's a management problem you talk about. I sympathize with that, and have a little problem with the department myself when I see where some of the money goes. But these dollars certainly are not enough to do the total job. They're just a funding source that, again, I think ties in, make sure that the taxes and the usage fees that we pay on fuels and usage of the system goes back to the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jones. And for the record, we have been joined by Senator Schultz. Is there anyone else on the teleconference network or here in Juneau that wants to speak on SJR 23?
This is David Walton. I'd like to respond to Senator Jones, please.
Okay, David, go ahead. We'll, go ahead.
Yes, the problem is, as you well know, that this time you do not mention a tax increase. The department's position on this, and has been for the last three administrations, is to double the gas tax in order to provide these funds. The only advantage in passing this is the tax increases which will follow, the same as in the Postal Department. Thank you.
Okay, David, thank you very much. Then this closes the public hearing on SJR 23. We have it before the committee. Is there any committee discussion? Pardon? Is there any other committee discussion? Then, hearing none, the chair would entertain a motion. Senator Pierce.
I move Senate Joint Resolution 23 with the accompanying fiscal note as presented for recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none, the bill moves from committee on individual recommendations. The next item we do have before the committee is Senate Bill 218. It's quoted as the Marine Pilots Bill. It was put in by Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We have the chairman here, Senator Pierce. Want to make some opening comments, ma'am?
I just would like to ask if the procurement bill could be brought up after this is finished.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Senator Pierce.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you bringing Senate Bill 218 to the committee today. What you have before you is a bill, and I want to explain how you got the bill that is in front of you. Last year, the past 2 years, as previous chairman of the Senate Oil and Gas Committee, I became intimately familiar with the recommendations of the Spill Commission that was put into place after the Exxon Valdez wreck. If you'll note in your packet, recommendation number 20 of that Spill Commission was about marine pilot qualifications, and it stated that training and experience standards for marine pilots in Alaska should be upgraded to require actual experience in Alaska operations of vessels as thresholds of 60,000 and 150,000 deadweight tons. During the different hearings that we've had on oil spill legislation and the reasons for the Exxon Valdez disaster, a number of times some of the commissioners spoke to their concerns about the marine pilots industry in the state of Alaska. Because of that, Governor Cooper directed the Office of Management and Budget in the Division of Policy to conduct a study of the marine pilotage system that we have in our state today and to make some specific recommendations that would strengthen the state Marine Pilotage Act. And you have a copy of that report in your packets. We also have present in the audience today the two people who actually wrote the report, Mary Lou Madden and Brad Pierce, who I'm going to be calling on in just a minute to speak a little bit about where we're at the moment in the industry in Alaska. The recommendations, the report and the recommendations were taken to the Marine Pilots Board. And at, I believe, and we have some of the board members with us today too, I believe it was at their December meeting, the board chose to go through the recommendations one by one that called for statutory changes. And knowing that they were up for sunset this year, they chose which recommendations they were interested in having, or that they could agree that they would like to have put into a bill. And they voted up or down the different things that they'd like to see put into an actual bill. And Senate Bill 218 is the bill that came out of that meeting. It includes the recommendations for a bill that came from the Marine Pilots Board. The Hickel administration did not introduce the bill that the Marine Pilots Board came up with. Instead, on the House side, we have just a simple sunset bill. That bill has come across to the Senate and is in the Labor and Commerce Committee. Representative Sherry Davis has also introduced a bill on the House side that deals with many of these same issues and goes further than the simple sunset. That bill is moving on the House side, and I expect it to come to the Senate and be the vehicle that we'll use to both do the sunset and also to change the marine pilot legislation this year, and that's House Bill 194. And I speak about House Bill 194 because you have in your packet a memorandum, and they're available on the side for those of you in the audience who don't have one, in which Mr. Pierce and Ms. Madden have compared Senate Bill 218, which we have before us, and ACS, and I'm not sure which one, of House Bill 194, the Marine Pilot legislation on that side. Mr. Chairman, I believe that there are some issues that are not embodied in Senate Bill 218 that the committee does need to address, because all I did in introducing 218 was take the bill, as I said, that the Marine Pilots Board would have introduced had it come through the administration. I thought that was the fair place to begin. What I would like to do, if it's all right with you, is ask Mary Lou and Brad to give us an update or an overview as to where the industry is in the state at the moment and discuss some of their findings and some of the recommendations that they had in the report. So we'll have kind of a basis where to start.
Yes, that's fine. If they want to come forward and maybe move another chair over.
And I do note that we have at least one member of the board, and that the board is probably going to want to comment, or they may not want to comment on why they didn't include everything that was in the recommendations, but I'm sure they will if asked.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brad Pierce. I'm with the Office of Management and Budget, and I was co-author with my partner here, Mary Lou Madden, in the study. We didn't know anything about Marine pilots at all when we were assigned to do this piece of work. What we approached the problem here from, I guess, two perspectives. We wanted to verify the state's interest in having a marine pilotage system. And indeed, we did that. We found that the state had a compelling interest to protect the lives, property, and the marine environment of the state. Marine pilots are employed to use their local knowledge on foreign flagged vessels that enter state waters. Oftentimes, a marine pilot is the only person that speaks English on the ship. And after the Exxon Valdez disaster, many states are reviewing their pilotage laws to see what if they can be upgraded. And that was our approach. We looked at the existing system, and then we looked at comparing it with other states. Every coastal state has a marine pilotage system, and indeed practically every country in the world. It's an ancient profession. It goes back to the Romans. In our methodology, we conducted a survey of all the marine pilots and ship's agents in the state. We had a 57% response. We had meetings with the three existing pilot organizations, and then numerous contacts with individual pilots, who some of them dissident pilots, some disaffected with the way the system is now. Because Juno's, you know, cruise ship port, they'd come up and talk to us. And all last summer, we had one after another pilots coming in and speaking with us. And then finally, we did a review of what other states do and what their laws are, and how our Pilotage Act stacks up against them. As Mary Lou will talk about some of the findings.
My name is Mary Lou Madden, and I'm also from OMB. The major finding that we concluded from the study was that our system of pilotage and the statute that was in place was not able to keep pace with the changes in the industry. It was passed, the original statute, 20 years ago, and except for including oil tankers in an amendment offered in the mid-70s, there's only been minor technical changes to the statute. Right now, we have in our statute and regulation, we have two major regional areas where you can get licensing. The first is Southeast, which goes from Cape Spencer down to the Canadian border. Then we have, starting from Prince William Sound all the way around, a Southwest region, and kind of a no person's land in the middle where you can get endorsements on either side. But as you can see, that's an enormous area of the state for either licensing. And what has happened in the past 20 years is that we have definite regional shipping patterns. In Southeast, we have an explosion of the cruise ship traffic. In this area, of course, the tankers. And out here in the chain, we have a new shipping pattern and a new set of circumstances with the bottom fish industry. So because of the way the industry itself has evolved, rather than our regulatory system, we have, in effect, three regions in the state. Each of them characterized by different shipping patterns, and each of them characterized by different geographic and weather conditions. When we took a look at how well our system was able to regulate the activity in these particular areas, we found several major problems. The first one is that the board and the enabling statute are very weak. The original statute was intended, like many of our statutes in the state, to give the board broad powers and flexibility to deal with changing circumstances. Unfortunately, the language of the statute is very weak, so the board has been consistently challenged on its ability to make any regulation of the industry. The board authority is now under fire in several very important areas. Licensing requirements, for example, the board standards have been challenged successfully in court. the board has been challenged on its ability to set tariffs, on its ability to set pilotage waters, where foreign ships coming into the state must put on a state pilot. And they have been challenged in the area of being able to discipline pilots. In the licensing area, it has been charged that Alaska has the lowest standards for marine pilots in the maritime states. When you're looking at licensing, you're trying to certify competency in ship handling skills and in local knowledge. Most others, well, virtually every other state, with the exception of Alaska, license pilots either through an apprenticeship system or through a deputy pilot system. In an apprenticeship system, you can have very low entry requirements, but you have a very long training program. In a deputy system, you require higher ship handling entry requirements and then a period where you get your local knowledge. Alaska has neither, and it has, in effect, very, very low entry standards and very, very low certification of local knowledge. So unlike other states, we're not entirely sure what we're certifying. And even the low standards that we have been so successfully challenged that we virtually cannot require for a person who wants a license for Southeast that they have their check rides or their dockings and undockings in Southeast. They can dock and undock in virtually any area of the state and still get certified for a specific area, which they may or may not have ever been in. We find that very difficult to accept, given that what we are interested in as a state is pilots with local knowledge. One of the main problems with our statute as it currently is set up is that we treat licensing as an individual right, rather than as a franchise granted by the state to perform a public service. Therefore, most challenges to a denial of licensing are made on the fact that the state is denying an individual right, and we find that a weakness in the statute. As far as pilot discipline goes, although we have model language in our statute, it's probably the best of all discipline sections in the maritime state. We find that the board has almost no capacity to follow through on complaints, do investigations, or otherwise follow up on areas that might be of concern. A particular lack in the statute is attention to alcohol and drug abuse on the part of the pilots. We also found that we have some difficulties in the service delivery of pilotage services. The traditional way of servicing ships is through pilot organizations. Pilots voluntarily organized to be able to service ships that come in 24 hours a day, 365 days out of the year. We found that under the existing system that there were problems with equal access of people who were not a member of the organization getting the necessary experience to be able to upgrade their licenses. We found charges of abuse of monopoly power among the associations. And we found that associations, just like the state board, were being increasingly sued by members or people who were not able to become members of the association. And there was a real breakdown of the association's ability to monitor and to discipline its own pilots. A few other things that we found that our state statute leaves the associations very vulnerable to liability if they attempt to train new pilots, and yet pilots are the only people that can train pilots. We found that particularly with concern over oil spill that our state pilots were becoming more and more vulnerable to lawsuits, almost nuisance lawsuits, in which every time there was an accident, the pilot was automatically sued. We feel that because pilots are unable to get insurance to the amounts that they would need, that there must be some protection for pilots for pilot liability. The recommendations, overall recommendations, are to strengthen the board, give them clear authority to monitor and regulate the system, insist that the board strengthen entry level and local knowledge requirements. Also, because the state is so vast, there should be some recertification requirements, we feel, so that people who are recertified, get their license renewed, have been in the area that they are licensed for, which is not the case now. We feel that exclusive licensing regions are not a great deal to ask when you're talking about the enormous coastline and conditions in Alaska. We feel that the state has to be able to better monitor pilot organizations, and that the state must increase its ability to follow up on charges of pilot misconduct to be able to discipline pilots.
enforce the pilot discipline and investigate accidents, we recommended that a Marine pilot coordinator be hired by the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. This would be paid for out of increased license fees for pilots. They pay their own way. There's no real fiscal problem there. The coordinator would be responsible for conducting investigations of incidents and accidents, and to compile information on ship movements so that we have some. Now we collect information on what pilot rode on what ship when, but it's so disorganized that it's not very useful for any kind of management purposes. This person would also review the bylaws, operating rules of pilot organizations, and training programs to be sure that the state's getting what it wants out of that. Let's see, we recommended a $5,000 liability limitation on pilots, and some protection, antitrust protection for pilot organizations. They have if we're going to require mandatory state pilotage, and we're going to put organizations in charge of training pilots, and we're going to tell them who they can take and who they can't, we felt that they needed, the organizations themselves felt that they needed antitrust protection. None of these things are any different than they've all been taken from other states' laws. I think that perhaps the furthest we've gone is the antitrust protection. We've probably taken it a step further than other states. We have pilots now the pilot organizations that are subject to suit if they dispatch a pilot to a ship and the ship doesn't want him, they can come back and sue the pilot organization because they didn't get their trip. That kind of thing. There are two lawsuits pending now on antitrust grounds, mostly have to do with access to training. We feel that we're taking care of the problems that have occurred in the past as far as equal access to pilot training by having much stronger oversight capability over the pilot organizations. That's it.
We'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Jones?
Mr. Chairman, you see as the two biggest problems here, I mean, it looks like, sounds to me like maybe tariffs and regionalization might boil down to, and then, of course, the control that the board has. Three things were
the major thing is the control of the board.
What we're talking about might be those three things.
Yes.
I'd say those were the real bones of contention here. The exclusive licensing regions, there are some shippers who would like to have pilots licensed for their entire route, be it from Whittier to through Southeast or whatever. We want to give the board the power to set the parameters on what local knowledge is, what you can know as far as the piece of the coastline. Eventually, we probably want to go to even smaller regions. Right now, we've identified three that are reasonable. But there's nothing that says in the bill that says the board can't make overlapping regions to suit shipping patterns. It's a bone of contention. I'd say that was one of the big ones. Anything else you think of? Well, the antitrust and
the pilot liability are areas of discussion.
The pilot is covered under the ship's insurance. Liability doesn't seem to be that major of an issue, except is it, because we aren't allowing for gross negligence here or anything like that. I would say that the antitrust aspects of who can become a pilot. That's an issue.
I haven't read this piece of legislation, but would that come under the review of the board? I mean, would they end up determining who gets a license?
Yes.
Definitely. Yes.
And the board is composed of two pilots, two shipping agent representatives, two public members, and then our commissioner's designee from the Department of Commerce and Economic Development.
So we're going from, I guess, licensing through what experience with an association. Now, does the board now control that, or does the association control
that? No, the board has licensing standards. The problem is that it has not been able to enforce its licensing standards. And the standards right now are quite minimal. They generally require, in moving from one license to another, that you dock and undock a certain number of times. But even those few standards have been challenged.
In your response, you said you had a lot of responses this summer. You had a response from ship's agents and from pilots?
That's correct.
Yes, we surveyed both.
Could you maybe run through what maybe a generalized response might have been from the agent and from the pilots?
Well, by and large, most of our ideas came from those surveys. Most of the pilots felt that we needed at least to increase our entry-level requirements, because the best training for a pilot is experience, not textbook and that. Most pilots and ship agents both felt that local knowledge was important. They may disagree on how big the local knowledge is, but certainly the local knowledge was important. Pilots asked for some kind of liability protection. Those pilots who were associated with associations, formal associations, felt that they needed antitrust protection. Everyone seemed to agree that the board needed strengthening, that one of the major problems right now was that the board was unable to act because of successful challenges. I think that's
I would say that of the local agents that we interviewed, you know, statewide, were very supportive of strengthening the pilotage statutes, and thought that local knowledge was what they were buying. And I'd say that as this thing has gone on, and it's gone past the board level and gotten into the legislature, and we've heard from the home offices of the shipping lines and so forth, there's been a difference. There's been more concern with how this legislation would, well, they don't like exclusive licensing regions. I'd say that was a major change that I've seen as this thing's gone along. They want to be able to put a pilot on at Dixon Entrance and have him or her go wherever the ship goes, and that's probably the main issue.
Thank you.
Senator Pierce.
Thank you. One of the things that I remember in the discussion from the Oil Spill Commission and some of the hearings that we had last year based on that, talked a little bit about if your Coast Guard license has been revoked, then your state license, you should not be able to operate under a state license if you no longer have a Coast Guard license, and vice versa. I note that in the bill there is an amendment, or there's a change on page 6, line 8. Disciplinary action may be taken if the Coast Guard license is conditioned, suspended, or revoked, and so on and so forth. And that also adds the chemically impaired language. Did the two of you discuss in making your recommendations, or have you heard discussion about the very beginning of that section, which says the board may impose a disciplinary sanction rather than the board shall impose a disciplinary sanction? Because if you just say may, that Coast Guard question or the licensing question, I think, is still kind of out there.
The recommendation of the study was that they shall. I can't remember exactly how that language came in, but but definitely it needs to work both ways, and I believe the Coast Guard is working on similar language that would allow them to move against a person who has had their state license revoked. We would want that same privilege on the part of the state.
And I don't remember, and I apologize for this, was that recommendation for to be shall rather than may one of the things that the board specifically rejected at the December meeting, or was that something that just didn't?
I don't believe it was. I don't believe the language
we can
was there
ask
in the first place.
That was one of the findings of the National Transportation Safety Board.
Thanks. I knew I'd heard this somewhere.
Then I guess I'll ask the question on when you look at the map of Alaska and all the coastline and all the it would seem on the one side of the argument that you're looking at local knowledge and how much a person can comprehend and all this other business. Then you can look on the other side of the question with all the mapping and the charts and I guess the majority of this stuff, the reefs and stuff, don't change too much. They're on the map, they're there, and the points and all that. We have the radar, we have everything else that goes with it. Is it inconceivable to bring a pilot in from somewhere, have him look at these charts and it would be a safety issue on those ships?
There's two things that the state is getting here. There's two parts to pilotage, and that's ship handling and then the knowledge of the ports and the harbors where you're pulling into. And that's really the state's interest here, we see anyway, is we feel that the board should be able to set the parameters on what's knowable, what's reasonable for one person to know. Right now, you can have a license for the whole, you can go from Dixon Entrance to Pactovic. It's no other state does this, has this kind of arrangement. some have where you can be licensed for individual ports, but by and large, pilots are for individual ports in the lower 48. They aren't licensed for large areas. You know.
And in answer to your question, I don't believe it's simply self-serving on the part of the pilots when we hear from pilots that they cannot certify their own competency throughout the entire state. So although I don't believe that you could bring a person in without some frequency, some recent and frequent knowledge of the air waters that they're traversing. I think that's one of the reasons why pilots self-select generally to be licensed in only one area. Although you can have a statewide license, there's only five or six people in the state that hold statewide license, and that I understand is more kind of a prestige thing that actually they do operate only in one area. So the pilots themselves tell us that it is almost impossible to keep abreast of changes in all of the coastline, and I believe that's correct.
Senator Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many, I know we've got about 43,000 miles of coastline, but we don't have a port in every mile. Do you know how many ports that we're talking about here? I mean, when you say it's impossible to have a license for all the ports, we may not be talking about that many ports, really. How many ports do we have that this affects?
I would like to hand that over to a practicing pilot. I'm familiar with three large geographic areas, but I can't tell you every port, so if possible, we have...
wants to talk.
and a little further down in the process of the testimony and stuff, I'm sure we can bring that question up.
Well, we're talking about local knowledge. I mean, anybody that's docked and boat, you know, in a difficult situation, appreciates the fact that prevailing winds and tidal conditions cause the currents to change. You know.
In the Valdez terminal, pilots are an essential part of tanker safety. Their knowledge and expertise is recognized. But as with any profession, there is the need to ensure that the quality of the individuals in the organization remains high. Individual pilots retain their skills, are physically and mentally capable are performing their very important job. The profession must therefore be regulated. Regulation can either be through the free market, where the pilots would be liable if there's negligence, statute, where a balance can be
piloted services, just the competence of a pilot. The general thrust of Senate Bill 218 is therefore to be applauded. However, it is apparent that on some major areas it's still weak. The bill should be strengthened in the areas concerning drugs and alcohol usage. Currently as written, and Senator Pierce made this point, the board may introduce a drug and alcohol testing program. This should be changed to shall. I think the comments that I've heard so far today reflect my own, is that the board has to have the power to do things, and too many times the board has been unable to carry out its mandate. Similar use of the word may emasculates the section on disciplinary sanctions. Too many pilot authorities throughout the world are toothless tigers. A license should be automatically revoked if the pilot has breached any of those conditions listed in section 861-150 of the bill. I'll just run through those. The pilot is incompetent in the performance of his pilot's duty, is chemically impaired, illegal use or sells narcotics, makes a false statement to obtain a license, violates the provision of the chapter or regulation adopted under it, is guilty of misconduct during the course of employment, has had his United States Coast Guard license condition suspended or revoked, or is charged and collects and receives amounts of pilotage services that are different from the pilotage tariff. This stated, legislation that you're examining today must ensure that Alaska has a first-class pilotage service by clearly delineating and requiring sanctions for certain unacceptable actions. Finally, the one section not covered in the proposed bill is the composition of the board. Currently, the board is made up predominantly of pilots and shipping agents. It is our view that it's most difficult for a profession to be almost self-monitored in this way. The agents are living in the ports, the pilots live in the ports, they're all a very close community. In our view, the board must have representatives of not only the pilots, but of ship owners and of the general public and of the users of the piloted service. And that should ensure that the best monitoring of the profession is carried out. Thank you for considering these recommendations today, and I'll be happy to respond to any of your questions.
Thank you very much, Mike. Are there any questions from committee members? Senator Jones.
I guess I have a question. Mike, you referred to the fact the board should have jurisdiction over agents also. What do you mean by that?
No, I didn't say that. When I was looking at the composition of the board, I felt that it is now only pilots and agents, and the agents are too closely, and I'm not getting at them on this, but their profession is too closely entwined with the pilot for them to take a hard-nosed reaction against a delinquent pilot. We've seen too many times, and I'm not talking Alaska now, I'm looking at the whole countryside, where you have a pilot who is not performing his duty properly, but because of the traditional composition of the pilotage board has always been reluctant to proceed against him.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
I guess, Mike, what do you think about pilots sitting on the pilot's board? I mean, you say agents are too closely connected to pilots, but yet they shouldn't be sitting on the board. What about pilots? I mean, aren't we looking at people who have knowledge of the total shipping industry and the problems with encountered out there with the piloting?
Okay, I accept your point. I'm thinking, in fact, that I was trying to say it should be a balanced board, not just a group of people who are associated with one in one area in that profession. As long as we had sort of 50% of general public and users of terminal users and people like that, and then the other 50% are being the pilots. That, in my view, would help and strengthen the board. I've had discussions with the current pilotage board. I'm not going to mention any names on them, but individual members of that board have said that they've been unable to act. And it really is a toothless tiger, and we've got to try and I think it's somewhat similar to a thing you said to me a week or so ago. In many ways, it's a case of perception as well as a case of fact.
Okay, Mike, thank you.
Senator Pierce?
Senator Jones and I are still sitting here trying to figure out the balance question. At the moment, there are 7 members. 2 are pilots, 2 are agents or managers, 2 are public members, and then the commissioner or the commissioner's designee, who would usually be the person from occupational licensing. Are you saying that there should be, but what are you saying? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
I'm not sure why the current board doesn't work, whether it is because the public members and you have a board at the present moment which is 4 people, the pilots and the agents who they are very closely linked together, and then you've got 3 other people, one of which is a civil servant, and I for some reason that doesn't run. Maybe I'm attacking the problem from the wrong side. Maybe the composition is right, but maybe just the board doesn't have any power. I don't know. I'm just putting what my perception is, that the board doesn't appear to be able to carry out the mandate that it's supposed to carry out. And it would seem to me that perhaps it could be strengthened by having more public involvement in it.
Do you want to make a comment and then go on? Senator Jones.
Yep.
We'll wrap this fight up over the board here. Go ahead.
I agree that the board probably needs, you know, a stronger responsibility, authority there. But I guess I question whether or not pilots and agents are always in the same bed together, because it's been my experience anyway that they don't always agree, Mike. And they probably don't always agree on this legislation.
Senator Pierce.
Really, I was just perhaps on the one of the weakest points of my argument on that, but I'm just trying to say that pilots and agents are often considered to be very much the same, because when a foreign ship comes in, it's often the agent goes and appoints or requests the pilot for that ship, so there is that link through there. I'm really suggesting to you, and not actually giving you a solution, what I'm saying is that there are other users in a port that can work on the board. It shouldn't just be limited to that narrow group, because other people who have interest in the general safety. I think I'm willing to look at almost any solution to the composition of the board, so long as the board will tackle the really knotty problem of what to do with a pilot who is not performing properly. At the present moment, nobody will tackle that question. That's all.
Senator Pierce.
We so seldom win an argument with you that we're all jumping on the opportunity. The section that you talked about concerning teeth and whether the bill should say the board shall impose a disciplinary sanction or the board may impose a disciplinary sanction, can you just go through with us what the practices within Prince William Sound and the tanker trade? Can the companies, I assume they act, interact with pilots as opposed to Alyeska, and if I'm wrong, correct me, but can the companies refuse a certain pilot if they believe that he or she has has had a problem, but the board has not done any disciplinary action?
I'm on a little bit difficult ground here, because I don't like commenting on behalf of the ship owners, but because it is the ship owners, in fact, who appoint the pilots, and I'm not sure if anyone from the ship owners is testifying there today.
Not that we see.
Otherwise, raise your hand.
Therefore, I'll make one comment. It's my opinion that basically the type of pilotage which is known as choice pilot, where a shipping company has its own pilot, is not practiced. I'm not saying that's a good practice or not, but basically, as I understand it, in Prince William Sound, the ships take the pilot that they're offered. And I would say that most of the pilots and Prince William Sound are excellent people, and I've got no problems on that. I'm just looking at this from a point of view of some of the complaints I heard last year, some of the comments that were made by the in front of the Oil Spill Commission, and it appears to me that if we did end up with a bad egg in the piloted service, we would want a way to ensure that that pilot did not operate.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. And you did make a point with me being a dentist when you talked about that toothless tiger. I think that that guy was in bad shape. But we did bring up one of these terrible board members here, and we're going to work him over heavy here now. So I wanted him next. So, Mike, here you are.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I have a prepared statement here. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 218. I am
Mike. Yeah, you got that down there. You're going to say who you are, who you're representing.
I am Michael J. O'Hara. Okay. I reside near Palmer, have been a Marine pilot since 1979, and have lived in Alaska since 1974. I have extensive experience piloting ships ranging from VLCCs to cruise ships, bulkers, and fishing-related freezer ships. I'm also a member of the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. The staff study commissioned in response to Captain W. Murphy's letter regarding the shortcomings of the present Pilotage Act stressed local knowledge, increased entry standards, adequate training, continuing education, pilot board authority, pilot discipline, and liability. Training and local knowledge ensure safety. Regionalization of piloting ensures local knowledge. Training should be progressive. When I was 18 years old, I decided that I wanted to pilot ships. 14 years later, I worked my first pilot job. 5 years afterwards, after schools and tutelage, study and examinations, I piloted the largest ship in Alaska. I am not an unusual case. Regionalization reduces the scope and increases the focus of knowledge. Local knowledge is a continuous process. One cannot reside 9 months a year in Washington and waltz into Prince William Sound as a pilot and expect no changes or be proficient. Local knowledge is gleaned from a wide variety of sources, professional and personal. The Exxon Valdez had traversed Prince William Sound frequently, yet with some glacial ice, darkness, and who knows what else, a disaster occurred. Add other problems, radar failures, rudder failures, etc. Too numerous to mention, and an unfamiliar mariner could precipitate another grounding or collision, even though that mariner has a pilot's license, but is familiar only with the routine. Alaska has the lowest standards for entry into the piloting field. Alaska has some of the most arduous piloting jobs, as well as an extremely sensitive and unspoiled environment. Alaska should have the highest standards to protect what is yet pristine. The pilot board needs clout. Marine accidents must be rigorously investigated, and the board should not be hesitant to take action for fear of being sued. At present, each individual on the pilot board is being sued for not issuing a license waiver, to an unqualified pilot. Hence, an ambiguous word like may should be replaced with shall, as in page 2, line 23, under powers and duties. One particular industry would like company pilots who pilot from Ketchikan throughout Alaska. This desire is understandable from their standpoint. It's cheaper. No pilot boats, no travel fees would be involved, and the rates would be secret and negotiable. This industry also hires whoever is cheapest on the world market. Frequently, the only American wage earner on the ship is the pilot. However, this arrangement would not be in the best interest of Alaska because the pilot's first interest is company policy, which leads to compromising safety in the name of expediency. The state should not depend on a shipping company to hire and train pilots, nor provide the services an association of pilots provide. As we saw 2 years ago, shipping companies don't always hire the most competent mariners. A navigational mistake at sea may go unnoticed, but a navigational error near Bligh Reef or any land won't. Thank you. If you're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Mike. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Pierce.
Thank you, and thank you, Mike, for being with us today.
when you talk about changing the language may to shall, and I think you spoke specifically to page 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about section 13, which is the disciplinary part? Did the board talk about that at the December meeting and make a decision in terms of the drafting or the request of drafting?
The may versus the shall? I don't recall whether or not the board addressed that. The board wasn't, contrary to what's been said here, the agents and the pilots don't agree on things. And that probably was one of the areas of disagreement.
And you've been on the board since?
I've been on the board for a year and a half now.
Okay. In your year and a half experience, do you feel that the board has fairly balanced representation in terms of the public's interest versus the industry's interest?
Yes. The votes are very seldom unanimous. The only unanimous vote I've seen recently has been the one that supported some sort of bill. But yes, I believe that the present makeup of the board is not biased. Again, it depends on the individuals. And the fewer weasel words, the less opportunity individuals have of emasculating the act.
Can you tell us presently how a disciplinary action would work if it worked? And I think there's some question about that. But how does that disciplinary action get before the board? What has to happen?
A report is usually filed by someone who witnesses the accident or the violation. The investigators follow up on the report and try to get as much detail as they can. That's presented to the board. And I have not seen a case yet where any kind of disciplinary action was recommended. It's always either settled in court or dropped. Usually, the process is very slow. There are some cases before the board that we just get, they're just too old. We can't deal with them anymore because they're just years old. So that's one of the things that this investigator would ensure is prompt action, immediate investigation, and immediate response from the board. So the process of censuring, suspension revocation, hasn't really come before me yet. I haven't had a chance to vote on something yet. Continue.
Are you personally willing to have your licensing fees increase whatever amount it would have to be to pay for the coordinator that the report
Absolutely.
Recommended? And do you think that that's the feeling of most of the group?
Yes.
How many licensed pilots do we have in the state now? Do you know?
Active? Well, I think the license numbers are around 130 or 140, something like that. I would say active, maybe half that amount. I'm not sure the number of active pilots. We have people who are working on outside the associations or on cruise ships or on ferry ships, and retirees who still have licenses. So I can't say how many are active. So.
I don't know whether your personal and the board feeling are the same, and you're kind of speaking for the board too. Would you tell us what your feeling is, and however you want to characterize that, in terms of whether or not a single individual should be expected to be able to pilot throughout the waters of the state as opposed to within specific regions?
I think that the regionalization is an excellent idea. I don't think that that a person will have the competency to run from Ketchikan to Valdez or in Prince William Sound and Anchorage. The conditions just change daily. The ice from Columbia Glacier, it can change in hours. And people who work in Prince William Sound specialize there. That's somebody who works and lives, like I said, lives outside most of the year and then comes up to pilots for 3 or 4 months. can't know the changes. It's impossible to do that. And be proficient.
You and I spoke briefly once before about the waters within Cook Inlet and the changes in the shoals off, say, Fire Island. Is that the sort of changing along with glacier ice? Is that also the sort of changing?
That the shoal's moving constantly. That particular shoal is moving constantly. Unless someone stays on top of the local, you talk to a pilot who just went in there. What were the soundings at, you know, at zero tide? That's the part of where I say the personal knowledge comes from. You can read the newspapers, et cetera, but the personal knowledge, you give a guy a call and say, hey, what happened to this? You know, what was this, the tide like? Another thing is that, for example, in Valdez and Prince William Sound, we have escort boats now, and we have demarcation lines. The Coast Guard has changed rules almost daily for the last year and a half in response to things that have been going on. Unless somebody comes up and is aware of those, he'll get wrapped up with a tanker on a cruise ship or wrapped up with the ice when they have a closure. So yes, I think that the local knowledge, like I said, is a continuous ongoing process, year round, and it's a professional and a personal. You have professional contacts with your local Lowest Mariners and publications. You also have a personal contact with other pilots, with the newspapers, with everything else, the Coast Guard, local Coast Guard.
And just for the record, can you explain how your organization works, your scheduling in terms of how much time you spend in the Sound versus the inlet and back down the chain and wherever?
For every month I work, I usually spend 2 weeks in Valdez. I'll probably work 9 months and take 3 months vacation. The other 2 weeks I'll work in Cook Inlet. So I'm essentially two on, two off, Cook Inlet to Prince William Sound.
And back and forth?
And back and forth.
Each two and two? Okay. And do you work the Dutch Harbor in Alaska?
I have worked it, and I haven't been out to Dutch Harbor in quite some time. We have another association that does most of the work out there. For some of the larger ships, the company has been calling for VLCC pilots. There are some very large container ships that run in there. They want people who have handled the VLCCs in Prince William Sound so that they're familiar with the windage, the handling characteristics of larger ships. Yes, so I have.
And do you all bid particular ships somehow, or is it the luck of the draw? The ships
it's the luck
are
of the draw.
There and so you take it?
Provided that the association has a list, and when you come to the top of the list, you get the job if you have the qualifications. If the ship is very large, you must have a full endorsement. If it's going to some out-of-the-way place, you must have an endorsement for that place. So it's not necessarily luck of the draw. It's qualifications and position on the list of the board.
And does your license include, you have a state pilot's license and endorsements for Cook Inlet and the Prince William Sound, or how does that?
My license is from Yakutat West. So I have everything west and north of Yakutat, which goes all the way around the demarcation point in Canada.
The infamous which, Yakutat, my favorite city in the world.
And I would personally have no problem with the regionalization not working in Dutch Harbor or whatever, because I do not feel that the competence can be maintained.
A few years back, the Canadians came across Point Barrow with a tanker full of crude oil from the Point Mackenzie Delta. Was there an American pilot on that?
Yes, there were a number of American pilots on that. That was the Manhattan?
I don't remember.
That was early. Maybe early 70s, late 60s, and it did make the Northwest Passage, and there were Americans aboard.
Mike, on the, and I might have missed part of that, but when we were talking, we heard from Mike Williams in Valdez, where we were talking about his toothless tiger, and this on the shell parts, are you in support of of going from May to shall in those areas, or did you clarify?
Yes, please go. Yeah. Go from May to shall.
To shall. Okay, are there any other questions of Kai?
Can I just clarify, is that an official board position or is that a personal?
That is my personal position. I wouldn't want to represent the board on that.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Chairman?
Yes, sir.
How many sailings does it take to be qualified for a port at this time? I mean, how many ships do you have to be on, or what? What's the process they go through now to be licensed to come into a port?
The process now is first to have a Coast Guard endorsement for that port. The Coast Guard requires up to 14 trips. It may be less, but 14 trips is the standard for places that are fairly well traveled. In some places, maybe 20 trips. For Valdez. In very out-of-the-way places that get very little traffic, it may be 2 trips or 6 trips. It's been a long time since I've sat for Coast Guard pilotage, almost 15 years, so I'm not sure on that. But it varies from place to place. Once a pilot has the Coast Guard endorsement, then you'll go to, say, right now, as it stands now, go to the association and request trips in and out of the same port, and get more trips, and get dockings under the guise of another pilot. And we've made the specified trips 10 that he can get the issued the license. I believe it's 10, which is very minimal.
And I guess it would determine what size ship you could be a pilot on by how many times you took that size of ship in, or that
the way to increase tonnage is to first of all get the dockings under the aegis of another pilot, then to work on that license and get a specified number of dockings on that license over, for example, if a pilot's got a 20,000 ton license, He'll get dockings on and undockings on, say, 5 ships over 10,000 tons within a specified time to get an upgrade. It's a learning, it's a progressive thing, and we go from 20,000 to 40,000 to unlimited, and then a VLCC endorsement, which is 60,000 or greater.
Well, it seems to me like the way you talk about the way things changed in Cook Inlet and those types of things, I mean, how would you ever go in under the same conditions to know that you would be qualified under those conditions? I mean,
okay, that's a good question.
Change day to day. I mean,
what I'm saying is that there are different requirements for the association and the state. Just because a person has a state license, the association doesn't necessarily consider him qualified to go to, say, Anchorage. The state license is a minimal qualification, and the pilot must be cleared by the association to go to that port. He's got to ride with another pilot for so many trips to prove that he knows where the shoals are. He knows how to figure the tide. He knows where the docks are, and he knows the handling characteristics of the ships that go there. The problem is that the authority of the associations has been eroded, and that the associations can no longer say, you will do this because in the interest of safety, this is the best to do. Now, many pilots say, I have a state license, I'm qualified. And that's one of the reasons for increasing the standards for licensing and upgrading licensing.
Well, I guess there's some way we have to get to be more objective and subjective in determining who's capable and who isn't. I mean, if you're going to regionalize, it just seems like there's so many changing conditions daily. I don't know how anybody gets to be licensed to take that attitude. There's a point in time, I guess, when you just have to put the trust in that.
There's a point in time when your peers say you are qualified because you have done it so many times, and I'm confident. As association, I don't want somebody who belongs to the association released on a job that he's not qualified for, because that reflects on me. So I have to be satisfied that another pilot is qualified.
Let me get a feeling where, as far as time-wise, what the commitment is from Senator Pierce, as far as do you have something at 3 or can we go to 3:15?
I have CNRA at
3:30. Okay. Senator Jones?
I have a 3 o'clock.
You want
to step out briefly before, but I'll be back.
Okay, we can go ahead. How long do we have the teleconference for?
Until
3:30. Until 3:30? Okay. Then, are there... You did it, Mike. We'll let you go. Good job.
Good job.
Okay, then at this time, we will go to Ketchikan on the teleconference. And in Ketchikan, we have Bill Sharp.
Hi, good afternoon. This has been quite interesting from this side. I'm sitting in a room all by myself with five other pilots, and we are all very friendly. I just wanted all of you to know that. My name again is Bill Sharp, and I represent Southeast Stevedoring Corporation here in Ketchikan. And as well, speaking on behalf of a group of corporations by the name of that have formed under a title by the name of the Alaska Steamship Operators Association. Some of those members are ourselves, Southeast Stevedoring of Ketchikan, and our company operates in all of Alaska. North Star Stevedoring and Terminals, located in Anchorage, they as well operate Cook Inlet area and primarily Prince William Sound. Sealand, of course, operating in Cook Inlet and Anchorage. Alaska Maritime Agencies, located in Anchorage and operating in all of Alaska. And then as well, a group called the Northwest Cruise Ship Operators Association, who are the cruise ships that operate in all of Alaska. While we are familiar with Senate Bill 218, I must admit that we have focused most of our attention to the House Bill 194, sponsored by Representative Davis, and dealing, of course, with the same issues. There are many areas of concern which we as a group have with Senate Bill 218. A few of those you've touched on today, and I might add that it's been very interesting listening to those. And since we are on limited time, I won't go into great detail discussing each of those. However, some of them are concerns with tariff language, definition of area of pilotage waters, exclusivity of pilotage licensing to more than one region without endorsements to ports or waterways within other regions. I might also add at this point, in regard to regionalization, by default, we've been operating under a form of regionalization for a number of years now, and it's just been a natural evolution. And contrary to some of the testimony today, we feel that individual pilots can operate efficiently within one region and other ports or waterways within another region. I don't believe that regionalization itself can address the safety or proficiency concerns that pilots and industry has with individual pilots. And I'm a serious of concerns that we have is liability dealing with gross negligence by pilot organization. Mary Lou touched on that a little bit, and I don't think there's any intent to skirt that here. I think it's just a matter of proper language. As well, the antitrust language, which Brad Pierce discussed, and by the way, and I may stand corrected on this, but I don't believe there are any other coastal states that allow for antitrust. Another area is the definition of financial responsibility regarding pilot training. And in regard to the balance of the board, just briefly, I've been attending pilot board meeting since I was hired by Southeast Stevedoring in 1980, and probably have an attendance record of probably about 90%. And I can assure you that the frustration of the board, or the inability of the board to act in disciplinary areas regarding incidents concerning pilots and vessels, has not been for reasons of the association between ship's agent and pilot association. I know, speaking on behalf of the principals that we represent within the state, which are primarily foreign carriers, and again, we operate all throughout the state, there are none that I'm aware of that want the ability to sit on the board or to be here on a regular basis attending board meetings. They would prefer to leave that up to their local representation. These are really only a few of our concerns, and as I mentioned earlier, the majority of our efforts have been directed at House Bill 194, but we would be happy as a group to offer, within a reasonable period of time, amendments addressing these concerns and some others that we have. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify via the teleconference, and we would request that today this committee not take any action on Senate Bill 218, and I'd be happy to try and field any questions that you may have.
Okay, thank you very much, Bill. You mentioned that you have some or ideas for some proposed amendments, and you needed some time. What are you talking about as far as timeline?
A lot of it I see as being concurrent language that could work with both bills. So, I would say within a matter of days, within a week, I'd say by the first part of next week, we could have something there, or even if pressed, probably by the end of this week.
Well, we only have 20-some days left in the session, so time is getting precious. So I would ask you to get in contact with my staff, Johanna Munson, and see what can be worked out. We probably will go ahead and hold the bill over, but it will come back up probably on Thursday, which is the next time we have. So in between now and Thursday, we would like to get your input on it in written form. Okay, Bill?
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Then next we will come back here to Juneau, and in Juneau we have Joseph, is it Merrill?
Merrill.
Okay, please.
There's a...
Is it flip forward?
You want it on or off?
On. Okay.
Yes, my name is Joseph Merrill. I represent the Alaska Marine Pilot Dispatch Services out of Dutch Harbor. I've been involved in the management of marine pilots for about 10 years with several of the groups in Alaska here. And I want to just mention one or two quick little things on the bill. It's always frustrating to see things come down to one word of a may or a shall. But one of the difficulties with a shall is that it needs to have a time frame. If it says, for example, the board shall designate pilot regions, it needs to say by when. And we've all experienced our kids growing up and giving them a job and they don't do it and say, is it done, is it done? And they say, no, I'm going to. And the shall is a little bit like that. This bill represents a long effort of compromise and accommodation by the shipping industry and the pilot groups, the diverse interests of individual pilot groups. For example, I might just read the original language of the first proposal, and this is the language that was submitted by the Southwest pilots as far as regions. The Southwestern Alaska Pilot Region shall include all waters of Alaska from Icy Bay to Demarcation Point, which is all the waters in Alaska. That doesn't sound like regional specialization, and that has since been modified, and a lot of accommodation by all parties like that has gone into this bill. And I think the basic aspect of it that is supportable is that it clarifies the responsibilities and the duties of the board so that most of the details can be worked out in that small form by people who are directly involved and knowledgeable. And it gives legislative guidance to require higher training standards, higher entry standards. And I think on balance then that even though there's individual parts that I don't and my group doesn't support, that we would like to see it move on because it provides the framework that piloting can be improved drastically. I might just mention one thing for Senator Jones. You look at the coastline of the state and it looks like a big area, but the actual pilotage waters from Prince William Sound around the Horn are 1,037 miles, of which 200 and something is comprised of Cook Inlet. So even though there's an awful lot of mileage, in many places there's 2 miles of pilotage waters in getting into a port. But we would urge the support of the bill, the passage of it, realizing that it's not perfect, few of us are, that it gives the board the framework to make piloting a better